Pilgrim. That's why we left England, where we'd have a place to worship. And that's why we all here in the good old U.S. of A. But I'm glad to be saved and on my way to heaven, looking for this life to be over and a new one to start. And I'm glad while he was on the cross, it happened 2,000 years ago, I was on his mind. So that's the name of the song, and maybe you'll enjoy the words of it. Well, I'm not on an ego trip, I'm nothing on my own. I make mistakes, I often slip, you're common flesh and bone. I'll prove someday just what I say, I'm of a special kind. While he was on the cross, I was on his mind. And he knew me, yet he loved me. He whose glory makes the heaven shine. So while he was on the cross, I was on his mind. The look of love was on his face, crown of thorns was on his head. But strange beneath that rugged cross was covered in crimson red. And though his eyes was on the crowd, he looked ahead in time. And while he was on the cross, I was on his mind. Yes, he knew me. Yes, he knew me, yet he loved me. He whose glory makes the heaven shine. So unworthy of such mercy, yet while he I messed around and got it too high. Thank you for your attention anyway.
Thank you, Dave.
Good job. That was Theodis Corbin with an impromptu gospel song here. And we're very appreciative of his taking his time to sing that for us this afternoon. Okay. The hearty audience still with us there, some parts of it. This is another one of our workshops. This will deal with different traditions about navigating your boat and finding fish. These days you can actually go to commercial fishing school at some universities and take courses in such things as marine science, and navigation, boat building, that sort of thing. But most of the fishermen who are around today didn't learn that way, didn't learn through formal education and technical schools, but learned right in their communities from more experienced relatives and neighbors about fishing and boat building, navigating, many things like that. And a lot of this knowledge has been passed on for years and years. Some of it is specific to certain areas, bays, lakes, and rivers, that people only in those areas know about. Certain inlets and cuts and coves and the bottom there, how to get through there best. Certain ways of finding fish and the things that you look at in nature to tell you how to do that. And those are some of the things I like to learn about, because I'm not a fisherman. I don't know about these things. I'd like to learn about it along with you, with these very experienced fishermen sitting beside me. And on the far right here is Captain Ray Singleton of Mayport, now living in Keystone Heights. And beside him is Coaster Bougier, who's a former shrimp fisherman, snapper fisherman, oysterman, done a lot of different things. He now works mainly at making shrimp trawl nets. You can see those right out here. And right next to me is Tommy Knowles from Crescent City, who fishes the lower St. John's River, catfish, eelfish, and shad, other types of things.
Blue crab.
Blue crab. And I'd like to start by asking Captain Ray, what kind of navigation gear you first had on your boat when you first went fishing?
Compass. That's about it.
Steering wheel.
Steering wheel and a compass.
Yeah, that's it.
Huh? That was it. You go by, use the sun, use the stars. That was you got all that down. Well, that passed in on through years until they come along with all this modern stuff they got now. Hey, now anybody can do it. It's, makes no difference. If you never went go up to buy the equipment, then the fellow will show you how to read it, and you can do it. If you've got a friend to give you some numbers, or you're in business.
Yeah.
But it's nothing like it used to be. Mm-hmm. Like when I went with my license to carry people for hire, went running the Coast Guard then. That's many years ago. You can't do that no more. Mm-hmm. But the old man asked me, he says, you know navigation? I was a young fellow then, but I think I was about 19. And I said, well, that's all I've ever did all my life. He said, well, he says, you know one thing? He said, I bet I could turn you loose, take you blindfolded offshore, turn you loose, and you'd beat me back if I had a compass. I don't know about that, but more than likely, he was coming close, though, because you do. You use the stars and the sun, and if you're close enough, landmarks. Mm-hmm. But like I say, those days, you had to be a fisherman or a navigator to go catch fish.
Well, how'd you learn those things?
Through other people. Like I was saying a while ago about Leon Canova. Leon Canova, he was one of the best around now. And I had an uncle, too. You call him Chichimo. I got a parrot named that now. he's a legend. Yeah, I got me a parrot out there. I got an African gray there. I call him Chichimo. He got the name there from a fellow named Chickalina. Yeah, he nicknamed him. Mm-hmm. But that old man, he used to sail in them days. He didn't have no engine in his boat. And he'd go commercial fishing. And they'd think he's lost. By golly, the first thing you know, here he come back. Yeah, he had to load it down that time, but no navigation. I mean, just a compass. Mm-hmm. Old soap. Take a lead with soap in it, oxygen soap. Call it oxygen Bendix after Bendix come out with a recorder. But they call it oxygen Bendix. We used to get up there and throw that thing, you know, and marked all the fathoms. You got to where you could read that bottom just like you were down there looking at it. Mm-hmm. There's everything. You take C-fan bottom or little flakes off of the fan will break off, and you pick it up in the lead, and you know you're getting close to bottom where you're going to catch fish. Or you pick up little pieces of rock. Around rock there, you find yellow stuff. It looks like scratch feet.
Salt and pepper.
Well, you get the salt and pepper there. You get the salt and pepper, you're getting close to the sand hills. Yeah, old yellow stuff. It looks like cracked corn, you know. But you're getting close. Yeah. But all those signs meant something.
Yeah.
And like I say, I can't talk. I don't have no beer.
We got to do something about that, eh? Now I want to ask.
Get an answer, you know, you're getting close to.
I want to ask Coaster about something that I've heard fishermen talk about along the coast, and that has to do when you're fishing close to land and using ranges to navigate. Can you explain what that's all about?
Well, yeah, they use lights, you know, and they'll watch a pair of lights, and they go up so far, and the two lights line up, you know, together. They turn around and go back. It's working a piece of bottom that way.
Is that only at nighttime you'd use ranges?
Well, you use it daytime, too, by ranging up a couple of pine trees or palms or whatever you see on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
But everybody's got radar now. They don't do that no more.
Mm-hmm.
Lorans and plotters. So you just sit up there and punch in the numbers.
Now, did you use a lead line like Captain Ray was describing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell them also that now whenever you put your plotter, they got them tied together now with automatic pilots.
Yeah,
so now you don't have to do nothing.
You just punch in the numbers.
Punch in the number, put it on the pilot, and let her go.
If you leave in one point, go into another one, like he's going to leave down off the mouth of Mississippi River, and you wanted to hit Cape San Blas at Apalachicola, you'd punch in the Loran reading on Cape San Blas, and that machine would give you the correct course to steer.
That's right.
And if you got off either way, it'd beep, right or left. It kept you right on the line.
That's something different than the old way. Well, how much money does it cost to get all that gear to go shrimping now?
Well, a Loran cost about $1,000, and the plotter cost another $1,200, $1,400 with, paper plotter. They tried to use video plotters, but use the tapes, but they're not practical, get too much trouble. Mm-hmm. All using paper plotters.
You should watch those things work.
Yeah.
They'll do the job.
In other words, you can be dragging, like you hit a good catch, and you just punch a button in that plotter, and you want to go back, and that thing will take you right back there. You don't
right
touch the wheel. It does it. You go right back there. Identical, too. It's not over there 50 feet and over there 50 feet. You're there.
Now, I wanted to ask Tommy about this. He's younger than Coaster and Captain Ray. And another difference is he fishes in inland waters. Now, how much of a problem is navigation for you down in there?
Not too much. We mark our equipment by floats and whatnot, but you still want to line up shoreline. In other words, you pick out a spot on the shore, and when you're trying to find a small 3-inch cork out there in 3 miles of water, you got to pick out some variance point that you can go towards, and you just do it by feel. For example, you leave the dock, and depending on how fast you run, you decide, well, I've run far enough. I feel like it's close, and that's basically how I do it.
Now, does everyone understand what we're talking about with ranges and lining up things? Let's see. Now, some do and some don't. Now, let's say the buoy was Goose Culbreth over here. Okay, if he stands still a minute. Okay, that's our trap buoy right there. Now, how would you describe lining something up to find that buoy right there?
Okay, I would pick out a high spot in behind him, like a tall tree, one that is obvious on the horizon, and then in front of that, at a lower level, you would pick out another object. Could be a cypress tree with a crook in it or a knot hole in it or something. And I say knot hole, that is something with the top knocked out of it. And you would line up the lower and the upper line to take you to that point. And you would have to do it in other words, you couldn't take two points. You'd have to have them far enough apart from each other that would get you to that point. So you'd pick out the tallest object and line up the closest one to you that you could line up. Just two points, a high point and a low point, and get them in sync, because that's what will take you to that cork.
So if we could carry on our example here with Goose, who's standing very patiently, it might be this low mic stand in that tent post behind
right,
it.
Right. In other words, if I was going to that cork, that back there was a pine tree, this right here would be the cypress tree. All right. That's right in line. He's right in line with that. But now this would be behind him. Okay? This tree would be behind him.
Yeah.
But you see, if now, for example, if I move off this way, everything is out of line now. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'd have to be right here in order to go to it. And it's the same on any shoreline point. A low point and a high point for references, and stay on that line, and you'll run right over it.
Do you need navigation to help you with anything else down where you fish, apart from finding your gear?
No, I don't use any tools other than past experience.
Yeah. Now, the other major thing that fishermen need to know about, and it's perhaps a more elusive thing than navigating, because you, with practice, can, I think, get that down using even simple things like compasses and timepiece and a chart. The other thing I'm talking about is finding the darn fish, whatever you're after, especially if it's moving around a lot. How do you do that, Captain Ray? How do you find shrimp? What do you need to know?
Well, we use a small net, what we call tri-net. And you drop it down, drag it a amount of minutes, 1 or 2 minutes. That tests the area, see if there is any of that. Well, you go by how many you catch, you know about how the tri-net works, how many you figure you can catch so much per hour in the big net. So you just keep going and trying in different areas. Well, usually in the ocean, you look for a slough, mud bottom. They love mud bottom. They feed in the mud. Usually that happens over a hill, you know, where you'll get sediment in it. Well, that's usually your best spots. And like he says, they're out in the ocean, they're along the beach, you can use a bearing. But now, since you come with all this modern stuff now, you just push it in, let her go, and it'll do like he says, blah, 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 and I'm there. Drop it down, let's go.
Right.
You know pretty well by then it's going to be something there, you know. That's where they hang out.
Mm-hmm. Coaster, how do you know where to put down the tri-net?
Well, I always look at the sounding machine. The bottom looked pretty good. I tried it.
What kind of bottom would you be looking for?
Well, something without any rocks on it.
Yeah.
You know.
Tell him about over here the difference in the East Coast.
Oh, a lot of difference between the East Coast and the West Coast. We have a lot of mud bottom, and they have a lot of sand. And we always had a pretty good idea where the shrimp was to start with. I don't know why, but
yeah,
we did.
You get a feel for it.
You get a feel for it.
But also, like he's saying, and he's not thinking, which I would want him to tell me, is now on the East Coast over there, you fish down in a slough.
Yeah.
Now, you take over in the Gulf, that's a no-no.
Mm-hmm.
But down in the Gulf, you're going to catch a snapper there, or a grouper.
Yeah. Does everyone understand what a slough is?
In other words, it's deeper there than it is anywhere else. It goes down.
It's like a valley, on the bottom.
Yeah.
And you'll always find more shrimp on the side of that gutter,
right
than
on
the bottom
of it.
Right on the edge of it.
Right on, just you start coming up on either side.
Yeah, where the shrimp will be.
But over here now in the Gulf, you'll find what they call tabletop.
Yeah.
And you get off of that tabletop, it'll be just as flat as going down that road. And you come to the end, it goes like that.
That's it.
Don't let that net go off of there, because it's gone.
Mm-hmm. Solid rock.
That's right.
Now, and what if you were fishing for snapper or grouper? Would it be the same thing?
That's where they fish.
Yeah?
But see, you're fishing at nighttime. Well, you'll see a few boats out there now. Well, now on the East Coast, for snapper and grouper, they're fishing more at night.
Yeah.
Well, we would go to bed at night. Well, now they fish at night, sleep in the daytime. They catch more fish at nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
Why, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I guess there's more fish years ago than we get tired out going to sleep at night. I don't know.
Yeah. Tommy, how do you find fish on the river?
A lot depends on the species you're going for. For example, catfish, we let them find us. We put out bait for catfish, and they come to the bait. However, we don't do that year-round. Some devices that catch catfish don't require bait to catch them, and that's a device called a hook net. It fishes different than the wire trap. I don't fish hook nets, so I'm not going to talk about them. I don't talk about something I don't know nothing about.
Sure.
But anyway, now when I'm bait fishing for the gizzard shads, most of it is based on trial and error experience. You try an area, and if you don't hit them, you usually don't go back to that area. But at certain times of the year, specifically summertime, when I do most of the gizzard fishing, I watch for fish flips on the water. And I can determine what kind of fish is in that area based on what kind of flip the fish made on the surface. And if you see two or three in a within a couple of minutes there, it's a good indication that's a good place to set your nets, if you know what you're looking for. A garfish, for example, a garfish will come to the surface and he'll just, with his nose, he'll break the surface and just roll back down. Okay, a bass, when he comes to the surface, he'll tear the water up. You don't want to sit around that. A mullet will jump and splash. I don't set for mullet either. But a gizzard shad will just come to the surface and make a real quick snap with his tail on the surface. And it's almost like a click, like you're taking your finger and hitting the water about like that is what it would sound like. And that's what I look for in the summertime on still days is when I go out and get ready to set my nets, then I go out and look for those flips. And when I see them congregated in, then I set my nets around that area.
So you have to be able to recognize the behavior of all these different species.
Yeah, I would think so, to keep you out of trouble.
Now, I was wondering, Captain Ray and Coaster, are there things that you look for in nature, like clouds or weather conditions or things like that, to tell you that fish are in the water?
No.
Are there certain weather conditions that are best for catching a certain type of shrimp?
I don't know about shrimp, but it affects clams.
How so?
I was catching them Sunray Venus clams. It's a bright, sunny day. You catch the fire out of it. And if it wasn't, you wouldn't. We was using hydraulic dredges. I guess they went too deep for us, but we blow the sand out in front of that dredge, you know, a foot deep. But we sure couldn't catch them. I noticed that. We sure couldn't catch them.
Well, you can't catch any red snapper or grouper or anything like that offshore in the middle of the day. You might as well rack up.
Hot still. It's just that
sun. I don't know whether it's, they can see the... Well, I know it magnifies it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the sun rays going straight down.
Mm-hmm.
But in the middle of the day, you might as well put your cue stick in the rack.
But I took some of them clams and carried them down to Gulf Beach to experiment.
Yeah.
I had them live in the bucket. And I waded out and put them in the water. The white sand bottom. He turned up like this and went right straight down in just a few minutes. Like he was that deep down in that sand. I decided then that what it, you know, what it was doing. On a dull-looking day, they just went deeper.
Yeah.
That's all I could figure.
Yeah.
Now, do birds or porpoises or anything like that tell you anything about fish being around or
porpoise
types of
will.
Fish?
That'll believe porpoises.
Run them off.
Yes, sir. I used to be one of the biggest guys. I shouldn't say this because a lot of people hate me for it, and I hate myself now, but... Them days, I didn't feel bad about it at all. But I was out there trying to make a living, and had these guys come up there and run your living off from you, and you get pretty mad.
Yeah.
I used to shoot them. I've shot hundreds of them.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, I shot one. I shot him right point blank. I blew a hole in him that big around there, right in the top of his head. And I couldn't, and it didn't kill him. And I turned around and went back to him. And I shot the whole top of that porpoise's head off. And I'd never kill that porpoise, and it cried like a little tiny baby. And that thing, I had to go off and leave it. I know I shot it at least 10 times with a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, right then, something told me to quit this business there, and I did. I never shot none of it, and I don't believe in it no more.
Tuna clipper's out of business, killing porpoises.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
They all in Japan now. We got one. Canada left in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
they catch them tuna with the purse seine. Mm-hmm. And they get the porpoises because the porpoises in there feeding with the tuna. There ain't no way to strike them without it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way they told us where a school of tuna
was. They put them out of business.
Yeah.
Are they just getting ready to do it to the shrimpers about the turtles?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Matter of time.
Yeah. Well, you take, I got a good friend that worked for the state. In fact, he worked for the government to build nets to stop these turtles from going in nets. And they spent oodles of money trying to figure out a net that would get the turtle out and still catch the shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think they don't have one yet.
No, I went to one of their meetings the other day, and they got some flimsy-looking mess there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the best one I think they came up with was that chute.
Yeah.
They built a chute down in next to where they call it the cod sack, what everything ends up in.
Yeah.
And just ahead of that, they built a chute out of big mash, 4-inch mash, 6-inch mash, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing the same thing with jelly balls. Yeah. They run the jelly balls up.
Like a cannonball shooter.
And they make it on an angle, and it's sewed in the bottom of the net, and so just ahead of the bag. But they let the top of the net flap. In other words, they don't sew that onto the bag. And this turtle can come in, and he can't go through that mash, so he'll go and shoot on out.
Goes out the hole.
Where the shrimp will go through that mash, but they also allow shrimp go out through that.
Him and about 50% of shrimp go out, too.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of controversy about that, to be sure. I've been asking most of the questions. I was wondering if anyone out in the audience had any questions of these fishermen about finding fish or navigating. Maybe something you need to know to catch fish. Any questions? I guess not. I guess they know.
Let me
it
tell
all.
You something about a turtle while we're talking.
Okay.
Now. Everybody thinks it's this, and I know this for a fact. You wouldn't think a turtle buries up. You ever heard of turtle burying up?
No, sir, not really.
All right, down at Cape Canaveral, they dug that channel through in the Cape.
Yeah.
They went down, divers went down because the shrimp was going there to catch so many turtles. And they found out that the turtles do bury up.
Well, freshwater turtles do. I don't see why salt ones didn't either.
They do bury up. But they go down and drag them turtles up, and they catch nets full of them.
Yeah. You know, diamondbacks bury up freshwater turtles.
Yeah.
People used to, when I was a boy, used to get them to eat, and they'd go down to the freshwater creeks, and they'd look for, look like a bird track in the mud. Ram your hand down in and fill out them diamondback turtles.
Hmm.
Or they'd bed down for the winter. Mm-hmm. That's very logical. They buried up too.
That's right. I don't see why they wouldn't.
Yeah.
But they say that's an actual fact.
Hmm. Well, we're just about out of time here with this workshop this afternoon. Anything that Tommy or Coaster or Captain Ray would like to add to what we've been saying?
I don't think so.
Okay. That's a little introduction to navigation and fish finding. And, of course, there's much more to it than we can talk about today and much more that all these fellows know about their areas and their types of fishing than we can possibly cover. It's a very complex and sophisticated knowledge that they all have about finding the species that they fish for in the waters that they fish. So could we have a nice hand for Captain Ray Singleton and Coaster Bougier and Tommy Knowles? And thank you. In just a minute, Thetis Corbin, the boat builder from Steen Hatchie, who's been building this boat out here, is going to join me and talk a little bit about building that boat. And you can have a chance to ask him some questions, too, if you'd like.